Welcome to Parenting from the Inside with Anna and Joel. Today we're focusing on the topic of attachment parenting. Why is this important? Why does it feel important to you?
Well, for me, when I think I talked about this in the first episode as well, but when I first started learning about kind of the new paradigm of parenting and what I call New Danish parenting, which we're going to talk about next episode, I felt a lot of shame because there was a lot of things that made sense, but I couldn't really do it. Like, I felt like I had to memorize it or something, which was not helpful in relation to my kids. And it wasn't until I started learning about attachment and how our body and our brain structures are created through attachment relationships that it really began to make sense for me, that I began to make sense for myself. In my opinion, attachment is the foundation of understanding ourselves. That's why I think it's important to learn about. And attachment is the foundation really of our lives, of our relationships, feeling self-worth and feeling safe in the world, being able to feel joy. Yeah, so if that foundation is not secure, then we're going to struggle.
Yeah. And I guess for me, like, one of the things I realized, I think, when I became a parent was how little sense I had of that meant and how I was supposed to do it. And that all the sense I had was based on what I thought I should be doing. And stuff like, I should be sort of firm with my child and make sure there were boundaries. And there was a certain way I needed to be, especially as a father. So discovering more about attachment and, you know, the sort of revelation that actually it's about helping my child to feel safe with me. And that being the origin of all the kind of relationships that I wish her to have in her life. If I can help her get that right, then that sets her up so well to have stronger relationships with other people, and especially men. So that really shifted the way I looked at my role and the kind of relationship I was trying to build with her. So for me, attachment is a real opportunity to think about why we parent and what kind of relationship we're trying to build with our kids. So it's exciting to have this conversation with people.
I think a lot of mothers are happy to hear your voice in this, because this, like, so many of us didn't have this, especially from our fathers, because it was just one thing. It was just a different time when we were kids, right? And many other reasons that's really missing still today. And understanding that, like you're saying, it's like boundaries. We're going to talk about that probably next episode. It's such a misunderstood thing what boundaries are. And we think it's something outside of ourselves and putting rules or putting consequences, punishment, all this kind of stuff. That's not what it's about at all. It's about ourselves being with our kids from inside of ourselves and being self-led. We're going to talk a lot more about this because this is really important, but not so much today, though.
Yeah. And I think there's loads there around, like, in the case of men, you know, are the parts that, like, determine how we think we should be as men and what it means to be in relationship with other people as men, you know, stuff around, like, masculine or feminine and these kind of things. We're going to come to that another time. So what are we going to look at today? We're going to talk about what is attachment, safe attachment and insecure attachment. And once I understand that, well, how can I be a safe attachment figure and help my child have a secure sense of attachment with him or herself or with me as a parent? And then we're going to look at ways that we can move to support co-regulation with another person and self-regulation in ourselves. So we're going to try and cover sort of the theory and then make it as practical as we can to understand your relationship with your child or a significant other and helping you build more of that in your life.
Yeah.
So we've got a few points we're going to kick off with. Over to you, Anna, and we'll try and summarize them as we go along.
Yeah. So let's first talk about what is attachment. So attachment describes the relationship that the child can create to its parent, to its caregiver, to mom and dad, or whoever is the caregiver of the child. And this relationship is really important for the whole life of the child, really. It's about the felt safety, which is about the nervous system. We're going to get a bit more into that. It's about how they get to know themselves, how they understand themselves, both inside and in relationship to the other person, and how they connect to people later on. So it's not just about babies and new parents. It's about our relationships and our felt safety and just about being, really, throughout our lives. And if we look at it, like, on brain development, the relationships and the environment we grow up in is what shapes our brain. It's what shapes our inner system in attachment terms. So especially the first few years of lives, I can't remember how many millions neurons or pathways are created, like, every second, but it's quite a lot. So all the interactions that happens, and especially the ones between us and our parents when we're babies, create so many neural pathways all the time in our brains and creates how we feel, what we know, what we understand inside of ourselves. So for instance, like this is a way to understand kind of how neural pathways works, is like if a child sees a cat and then hears the sound of a cat, then you would have two different neurons that would create a pathway to each other. If you see it in a petri dish, they're like grabbing onto each other, which looks very cool. So the sound of the cat and the image of a cat gets connected to each other. And then the stronger these connections get, then the image of cat and the sound of cat will be tightly woven together. So just by hearing the cat, now when we just hear a cat, you're going to picture a cat, right? You know it's a cat. And if a child spends a lot of safe time with animals, then those pathways will be stronger. And those parts of the brain that's related to that will have a lot of connection, really. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And I think for me, it's really helpful to think of it from the way the brain works. And, you know, I think we can all imagine that in the context of then like emotions, for example. So when I experience this emotion, when this is the response I get back from a parent in response to that emotion, that starts to develop that neural pathway and the understanding of what that emotion means and how I handle it. So yeah. I think that's the point we're trying to make of like how these pathways get built early on based on the type of relationship we have with our parent.
And actually the pathways in the areas of the brain that doesn't get used much, they disappear because it's like use it or lose it kind of thing. So that's really important to know as well. Even though the brain is plastic and we can do a lot later on, these like kind of basic structures, especially in young childhood, are really, really important for just understanding everything, really.
So this is like point one. This is what we really want people to, I guess, a kind of core takeaway from this is that like childhood attachment, the attachment relationships we have when we're children, when we're young, is the basis of our future connection with others, because it's in those earliest stages that we form these neural pathways and these understandings of what these emotions and these experiences mean, and that we then go on to apply in relationships when we're older. So childhood attachment is the basis of all the stuff that comes later.
Yeah, that's right.
So what does it look like when, what does it mean to be insecurely attached?
So a child will attach to their parent in the way that's possible. That means they cannot be too attached, but that they can be too insecurely attached. So if the caregiver is not safe enough, if the caregiver has a lot of their own trauma, if they're not able to create that safe space for the child to be able to lean into, then they will be insecurely attached.
So I think there's a point you made that's really important. Like you can't be too attached. And this is something I think a lot of, again, speak for men and dads in my life. There is this sense that we sort of equate being too caring or too present in some way to then making my child, it being having a negative impact on my child, because in some way they will be too attached. And the point to make is you can't be too attached. You're either securely or insecurely attached. And the part if we are concerned of our child becoming too attached in some way, that's probably more about us and some kind of concern in us. And I think the point I make to a lot of dads here is when we talk about safety and being securely attached, that doesn't mean not holding your child accountable for things. It doesn't mean having boundaries around appropriate behavior. It means thinking about how we do that, hold a child accountable, boundaries, etc., in a way that still allows them to feel safe and securely attached with us. That's the point. We're not saying give up on accountability and things like that.
Yeah. So what you're saying in IFS terms, it's really about being self-led, not being parts-led, right?
Yeah.
Because our children need all the safety, all the love we can give them, really. But if that comes from a part, that's going to come from more of a past experience, which is about us, not our child. So that's not going to feel safe. So that could be smothering instead of being actually loving, right?
Yeah.
But our children, like what we all need, what we all have therapy on later on is, can I be loved as I am? That's what matters.
Yeah. We're going to get to more of this later when we talk about what it looks like to be a selfie parent.
Yeah. So when we cannot be those safe attachment figures, which I think all of us in some ways are not always safe attachment figures. I don't think anybody just has a secure attachment. And I think that's important too, that it's not either secure or insecure. It's kind of in between. And in some areas of our lives and with some parts, you would say in IFS, we're going to be more securely attached than in others, right? Or with some emotions will be acceptable and some will not, for instance, depending on our parents' own trauma and our parents' own childhood. So there's both how securely is the parent attached. That's a really important part of it. what trauma did we have? What physical and psychological issues do we have? Because we all have something. And then it can also be related to early trauma in the child's life, like prenatal trauma, birth trauma, sorts of birth traumas that we don't even realize that can have an effect on how can they relate to us and how can we relate to them. So it's not always just because we're bad parents or something like that. There's always a good reason for it. And it's always something we can work on, that we're not always in control of what happens. And that it's really important that it's not about being perfect. Perfect is a part, right? It's not about being perfect. It's about really creating that secure foundation, which has nothing to do with doing everything right and doing everything perfectly, but being there from the inside and taking responsibility from the inside so it doesn't land on our children. And if we talk about it on the brain development kind of way.
Yeah, and what this looks like.
Yeah. So when a child is being shot down, left in shame, scolded when they're angry or ignored when they're crying or being neglected or abused, which can have many different forms. We talked a little bit about that last time too. Those pathways that are used and exercised in the brain are the ones that learn to shut off or to stop feeling, to protect, to keep an eye out for danger, to be in survival mode, really, like scary facial expressions, things like that. You're going to be on alert all the time or you're going to be shot down. So those pathways that are created are towards separation, towards protecting and protecting against, instead of being towards connection and leaning in and regulating in the other person. So the first instinct is not to seek co-regulation and connection. When we feel pain, when we feel upset, when we have strong emotions, it's shutting off and defending against, because that's what the inner system have learned is the safe way. Because there's nothing to come out to here, right? There's nothing to regulate into. And a child cannot regulate themselves, so they learn to shut off. That's the protectors in IFS that helps us shut off what is there so we don't feel it.
Mm-hmm. And this goes to the heart of what we were saying about how childhood attachment is the basis of our future connection with others. Because if we've learned or built certain neural pathways around difficult emotions, when we see or experience really strong emotions or difficult feelings, anger or sadness or whatever, if we've learned to shut off or that these are threatening things for us, then it's going to be really difficult to build strong relationships later in life. Because as we all know, if you're married or whatever kind of relationship, then we need to be effective relationships mean being able to stay with difficult feelings, hold space for each other's feelings. And if we're shutting down, fighting, running away at the first sight of these things, it's going to be really hard to build the kind of relationships that we want and that we want for our children, and hard to build a relationship with our child if that's what happens. Because we know if you're parenting, there's going to be some really difficult emotions coming up. So yeah, it's helping build that secure attachment when they're young so that these kind of difficult emotions don't trigger a kind of threat response in our child later on.
Yeah, you're saying something important about relationships too. Like when you're saying in relationships, we should be able to hold the space and be with the emotions and not shut off and fight and all this kind of stuff. Like, I think most people who are listening to this will be like, what? Is that possible in a relationship, right? That seems like a fantasy.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk more about adult relationships, right? But this is why attachment is at the essence. And what we're trying to do is help each of us think about, okay, if I struggle with these in my own relationships, then how does that relate to my own level of attachment? And maybe this is something I need to work on.
Yeah, we're going to definitely talk more about this in later episodes, about co-regulation, shame regulation, which is all about our own early attachment. That's going to be really interesting.
Beautiful. So this is that kind of point two, really important, that insecure attachment stems from a lack of psychological safety, not necessarily actual physical unsafety, but at least the level of psychological unsafety. So I guess then flipping that around, what does it mean to feel securely attached or be safely attached with a caregiver?
So as an IFS family therapist, I talk about outer attachment and inner attachment. So the outer attachment is the one we can create to our caregivers as children. And the inner attachment is dependent on that, because we need to be able to lean out to co-regulate, to be able to lean in and self-regulate. So a secure outer attachment, which is in attachment theory, is just called attachment, secure attachment, is what the father of attachment theory, John Bowlby, called a secure base. That's what the parent needs to be. That's what we call being self-led in a way. And it's about the child having a felt sense of safety. So there's something to return to when the attachment need is there. When the child feels scared, unsafe, uncomfortable, sad, overwhelmed, there'll be something to lean out into. And for a small child, this is like being there physically, right? It's meeting all those needs all the time. And slowly the child will start to move more out into its own thing, out into the world. But being there, the child knowing in its body, really, that mom and dad are there when I turn around. And when I get upset, they're going to be there to hold me. They're not going to scold me for that. Feel safe in the child.
Yeah. Yeah, so an image I really like for this to help us like think about what secure attachment means is the image of the base camp, which wasn't my idea. It came from someone else, and I can't remember who right now. So I'm sorry not to reference it, but the notion of the base camp, like if we want to climb Mount Everest, we need a really safe, secure base camp. And it's the same if we apply what a kind of healthy attachment relationship looks like. So if we want to climb Everest, we need a really secure base camp, a place we can rest, feel safe, be warm, be nourished, get all the kind of sustenance we need. Because without that, there's no way we're going to be able to take the next step and go and climb the mountain. And that's what we're talking about, the kind of providing that base camp for our child. And as they grow, the kind of support they need in that base camp may change. But that's what allows them to go and step out into the world and slowly climb higher and bigger mountains, take on bigger challenges. And likewise with everything then, like we can't just lock them into the base camp. That also isn't healthy. It's allowing them to go out, come back, because actually having that opportunity to go out and explore and then return to the base camp is where that secure attachment is built.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking about with babies, it's kind of easy to see it with babies. Like they need us to be there physically, right? When they're crying, they need to be held. And that skin to skin, heart to heart. Like I think most people know that if you put a child, a baby up on your heartbeat's going to synchronize with the baby's. Like it's going to regulate it, right? That's the nervous system. That's a calm nervous system of the parent that directly regulates the nervous system of the child. So the child will calm down. But of course, if my nervous system is all crazy and my heart is beating really fast, that's not going to calm the nervous system of the child. And that's very often what happens when we cannot regulate our children. Yeah, so as they become more independent, it's about being emotionally available for them and just them having that, knowing that that's that safe base, that's that place I can return to, which is both physically, but also just knowing that inside of themselves creates a safe inner attachment as well. So the nervous system of the parent regulates the nervous system of the child. So the co-regulation becomes self-regulation, which is something that slowly builds over time, and they will be able to carry that safe feeling when they go out into the world. So that protective kind of shield of the parent, or some people talk about it as like kind of safe wings that we put around the child, they bring that out into the world. So they know from the inside, I'm lovable, I'm good enough as I am. That's a very secure attachment. That doesn't, if a lot of people are listening, think, hey, that's not how it is. Most people don't feel that, right? Mm-hmm. But that's what really feeling secure is. I'm lovable, I'm good enough, I'm worthy as I am. And when we feel that, when we know that from our parents and we start feeling that inside of ourselves, what everybody else out in the world thinks of us will not matter as much. When we're being bullied in school, that still affects us, of course, but it's going to matter less because I know I'm lovable. I know I'm good enough. So it's not what they think about, it's me. It's what I know inside about me. Just that is such a big difference, right, in how we go out into the world, yeah. What we're able to do.
Yeah, and maybe a sort of practical example of this one, because I suspect, you know, if we all listen to this, we go, well, yeah, of course, I'm trying to make them feel safe and secure, and then it all sounds good. One really practical, simple thing I find where this can be a real challenge, you know, we talk about wanting our child to feel safe and good enough in the world. One element of that is that all my feelings are acceptable. My anger, my sadness, my pain. You know, so often when you talk to dads and you say, what do you want for your child? They say, I just want them to be happy. And I tell them all the time, I want her to be happy, I want her to be happy. Well, what happens if she's not happy? What happens if she's feeling sad or angry? Is that okay as well? And these are really small, subtle ways where if we're just telling and requiring our child to be happy, then maybe actually those other parts of them that are also valid aren't safe, aren't acceptable, aren't permissible out in the world. It's being conscious of all these kind of subtle ways where maybe we don't allow our child to feel safe in the emotions they're experiencing or whatever they need to express.
Yeah, that's really important because it's such a beautiful intention, right? I want my child to be happy, but also being able to be with them when they're not. That's okay too. And we don't have to strive for happiness all the time. We can actually be with what is there.
the more I can acknowledge my own pain and see that those emotions are valid as well, like anger and sadness, the more happy I'm probably going to be.
So in the brain structures, when a child is being met and seen lovingly and being held when crying and fed when hungry and being understood and met when they're angry, all these kind of things we're talking about here, millions of neural pathways will be created in the brain that goes towards being safe, being met. So there's a highway inside for connection instead of, like we said before, for separation. So that outer connection, that outer safety that our parents allowing and accepting and being with the way we are creates inner safety, inner attachment, so we can be with whatever is there inside of us without just getting overwhelmed or wanting it to go away.
Yeah, and what you're saying totally relates to what we've been saying about secure, insecure attachment driving the nature and the quality of our relationships in later life. Because when we feel seen, when we feel met, when we feel accepted, and we build that secure attachment as children, then it enlarges our window of tolerance, i.e. our ability to stay present, to stay grounded, to stay self-led when we come up against difficult emotions in us or in a partner. So this is how we build like the key ingredients to success in relationships, by being able to have difficult conversations and stay with pain and be present with each other in difficult times. So there is this direct correlation between what I experience as a child and what I'm able to bring into a relationship later in life.
So when there's the safe outer connection, the co-regulation, we're able to stay more in what you're saying, the window of tolerance. That's a way of talking about the nervous system. We're able to self-regulate and be with whatever is there without getting overwhelmed or shutting off. So the system will be more balanced. Our reactions will be less extreme because our parts will be able to lean into the self, self-regulate, right? And therefore, they don't have to be as strong. They don't have to be as polarized because there is that inner connection. We're going to be more balanced and we're going to have a stronger sense of self. We're going to have a stronger sense of that foundation inside, that feeling of self-worth, being able to feel ourselves, not lose ourselves when we're in difficult situations, and knowing but trusting in ourselves, even when things are difficult, even when we fail, because we're going to do that lots of times.
Yeah, so this is like what you're talking about, that the essence of secure attachment. And this is sort of point three. Secure attachment is this secure base, this base camp, if you will, that then allows us to go and have significant relationships or do big things in our life. And it's about secure attachment inner. So parts of us being able to lean into a strong core that is accepted and acceptable, and an outer security relationships, starting with our parents and caregivers, and enabling us to have those, build those meaningful relationships with other people later in life. So secure attachment, that secure base within and without.
Mm.
Yeah. And then we grow up.
That was easy.
Yeah.
So here's an example. You're having dinner with your in-laws and your child is not sitting still. It's not eating the food, not liking it, and is not behaving the way that your in-laws think they should behave. So they start giving you advice. They start telling you how to reprimand, how to make your child behave. And your partner is just kind of sitting there, not really doing anything. So this could trigger lots of parts, right? Yeah. So it could be like shame. It could be like, I'm not a good enough parent. I'm all alone because my partner's not helping me here.
Yeah.
Or there could be a pleaser. You could try to like cooperate with your in-laws, or there could be the inner critic telling you you're a bad parent and you might have anger coming up. So there could be one of these, and there could be all of these, and there could be many more. Without inner regulation, you're going to be more parts. That's, you're going to react outwards from these parts. So your reaction could be scolding your child for their behavior. It could be going along with whatever your in-laws are saying, and then kind of trying to please them and fit into that, even if you don't necessarily agree with it. Or it could be getting angry at your in-laws or at your partner, or maybe yelling at them, or maybe just being angry and holding that back. And with inner regulation, you'll be more self-led, so your partner will be able to lean in more to self. So this could look like slowing down inside of yourself and notice what's going on. We're going to get back to this in the three steps later. It might be speaking for a part if that feels necessary. So it could be saying something like, I hear that you're trying to help here. And right now, the most helpful thing to do would be to give me and the child some space, right? That could be speaking for a part that has a boundary there. Or helping the child in a more self-led way where you take care of their needs instead of your part's needs or the in-laws' needs. So it could be something like, it looks like you really don't like sitting here right now. Is that right? You're welcome to go out and play in the garden until you're hungry, or let's go out and get some fresh air. Or it could also be wanting them to stay there, if that's what feels right for whatever way you want to parent or whatever you think is important, but speaking from the inside for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you're saying what that enables us to do is actually parent based on what we think and with an understanding of what the needs of our child are in that moment, what's really important in that moment to us, and actually being the parent we want to be in that moment rather than just reacting based on the triggers of how it looks to our parents or how what we think should be happening in that moment but isn't happening. And it makes sense, and I think most parents can relate to these moments, having these moments on a daily basis.
So
we've talked a bit about what insecure attachment means and looks like, and secure attachment as well. And I think the next point is just to emphasize the connection between the attachment level we develop in our early life and how that impacts on our relationships in later life. The point being here, like, if you notice particularly negative patterns in your adult relationships or in your relationship with your child, that is likely to be the product at some level of your own level of secure, insecure attachment. So the invitation here is to U-turn and actually look inwards. Most of us tend to look outwards when we have problems in our relationships and then repeat these patterns.
I think you're saying something really important here, that our attachment in childhood affects how we relate to our partners or to other people, to our children when we're adults. So when we're not as securely attached inside, our part will look for that attachment on the outside. So, I mean, just like we are going to talk about this more in later episodes, how the way we find partners, that's our parts doing that, right? They're looking for something. That's why your partner will often be in some ways like your mom or like your dad, and what you just hated about what they did, right? Because your parts are looking for something out there. And then often we're like, oh, then my partner has to fix that or do better or meet me there. But that's not their job. They're not your parents. And your parts can actually lean in. Right, you might have to do some therapy, you might have to get to some work there, but your parts can actually lean into self, and then you can speak for that, or you can come out from self instead of from that part, and it's a totally different story.
Yeah, your parts can help you meet the need yourself rather than needing it to come from a partner or someone outside you. Yeah,
that's right. And that doesn't mean you have to just deal with your own stuff and you're all alone with it and all that. It's a very different feeling because it's actually getting those needs met in a way from the inside. So I have some examples here as well.
Go for it. We'll have an example.
So insecure attachment can look like comforting my child to make them stop crying so I will feel better because I don't feel good. I want my child to be happy, right? And I don't feel good when my child is not happy. So it's not about helping my child feel safe and feel good and feel seen. Of course, this is not conscious when we do this, but it's actually about my needs, right? So I want my child to stop crying. And this can both be comforting them, but it can also just tell them to get up again if they fall. So we're not actually meeting the child.
Yeah.
It can also be parents slapping their children when they feel powerless. Like, what else am I going to do? Maybe their parents did that as well. Because you react out of frustration, you react out of powerlessness. But securely attached, then you will actually be able to be with that feeling of feeling powerlessness without getting overwhelmed by that, without kind of falling into that. And from there, you can actually see your child, see underneath whatever behavior you didn't like, whatever behavior triggered you, and actually meet them there. Because there's always a good reason why our children behave the way they do. So insecure could also be getting overwhelmed by the strong emotions of your child. And actually, sometimes they end up having to comfort you, even though they were the ones that were upset. You're going to be even more upset that they're upset. So they're going to have to meet your needs. Yeah. And it becomes about you, not them. And in a secure attached system, it would be being able to be with whatever strong emotions are there without getting out of balance, like staying in that window of tolerance with whatever is there and being there the way your children needs.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Like one thing that comes up listening to you talk about that is for a lot of men and dads is the stuff around problem solving and needing to fix. You know, we hear a partner or a child complain, you know, express suffering or pain or a problem, and often the de facto response is, I need to fix, which, as we all know, often leads to more challenge because we haven't actually heard. We haven't actually allowed space for that person to feel heard or to express what's really there. And so much of that is to do with us and maybe feelings of shame or pain or powerlessness that come up when we hear that complaint. So when we're more securely attached, we can actually lean into our parts, can lean into ourselves and realize, actually, I'm okay here. you know, I am good enough, I'm loving enough, I am safe in this moment, so I can actually hold more space for my partner or my child to just express where they're at and not have to immediately fix them and turn them off. Which is a big one.
Yeah, I love that you're saying that. I'm hearing that when I have couples in therapy all the time.
Yeah.
And that's an important point, that when you're trying to fix whatever your partner is bringing to you, you're not really trying to help them. You're trying to help yourself.
Totally.
Yeah.
And this is the essence of what we're saying here, right? Like, this point is about, as we grow older, our level of attachment comes from the inside out. So the extent to which you're able to create that space that for healthy relationship with our partner or our child directly related to the level of attachment within us. So the invitation is, instead of blaming outwards, to look inwards, to do the U-turn and think, what's my responsibility? What's my role here? How can I help the situation?
Yeah. And not to blame.
Not to blame.
Yeah. Instead of blaming outwards, it's looking inwards, being curious. Because if you're going to be blaming inwards, it's not going to be helpful.
It's a loving inwardness.
That's right. And that's the cool thing, that we talked about that in the first episode as well, that we're all able to do this. Some of our parts are not able to do this, but from the inside, from a self-led place, we have all that curiosity and loving compassion, both for our parts and for other people.
Yeah. So that's it. So that's that point four. Like, if we're securely attached inside, then we can have a secure attachment with others later in life. So if we're struggling to have that quality of relationship as adults, then it's worth us looking inside how we build more secure attachment with ourselves. And the great news is, Anna, is that we can actually do something about this.
What?
That's what's exciting. Who knew? Yeah. Because often we say, oh, this is just how I am. Deal with it. You know, this is the way it is where it's gonna be. There are ways we can make ourselves and our relationships more joyful, more peaceful, more whatever is important.
Yeah, because people think this is their personality, right? That's who I am. But it's parts, and there's always a good reason. And when we're stuck in it, that's not just your personality. It's actually something you can work on and be even more yourself instead of just reacting in these kind of stuck, rigid ways. So secure attachment means that our children feel safe with us, not just physically and not just having their physical needs met, but also their emotional, their relational needs, and that they feel seen, that they feel heard, that they feel met, and that they feel loved the way they are. And when they do feel dysregulated, when they feel sad, upset, angry, ashamed, and all these things, that they can actually lean into us. Yeah, so we can be open to them instead of shutting them down, instead of punishing and ignoring and rejecting all these kind of old paradigm things we learned we were supposed to do. I'm going to talk about that in the next episode. But actually being there with open arms to meet our children and open hearts in a balanced way from inside. And that's what IFS calls being in self or being self-led.
And when we're, you know, again, often the thing that comes up is, oh, I can't create too safe a space because my child will think they can get away with everything.
Yeah.
And the point is that when we are self-led, we find the right words and we're able to, if necessary, critique the behavior of our child without critiquing them as a person, without shaming them as a person, without denying or shutting down something that's real for them. So we can still offer truth and we can still offer boundaries, but we can do it in a way that is still safe and loving.
Yeah. And people often think that that's really important, that I tell my child that this is not okay. I don't want you to hit your sister, all these kind of things. But actually, I mean, unless your child is very small, you already told them that a bunch of times. They already know that. Mm-hmm. Like, the important thing is really to meet them where they are, because there's a reason that I'm hitting my sister, even though I'm not supposed to. So people often think that that's the important thing, telling them they're not supposed to. Often we don't have to say that at all because they already know it. It's just about being there, being with what is there, why they got angry. So they start to understand themselves. So they get those connections inside. So otherwise they're going to think I'm hitting because I'm bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess it's being aware where it's coming from, the need to, because sometimes we do need to critique behavior, maybe because it is genuinely unsafe or something like that. But actually, how much of it is it due to the part that says I should be doing something? Oh, it's not good for my child to get down from the table during mealtime. Why? Oh, just because it shouldn't be. So I'm going to critique that rather than understand a bit more what that's about, or just acknowledge that that's where they're at right now.
Yeah. So being self-led and being self-aware enough to be there for our children's needs instead of our own needs. And I'm saying enough because it's about, talked about the good enough parent. It's not about being perfect. Again, it's about being good enough, being able to be in that window of tolerance and be with our kids. And we make lots of mistakes. We make at least 10 mistakes a day, probably more. And that's fine. It's good for our kids that we make mistakes because they learn that they can make mistakes as well. They don't have to be perfect. The important thing is that we can clean up after ourselves. Both secure and insecure attachment is something we can work on. It has a lot to do with the early years of our lives, but it's always something that can be worked on, something can be shifted. So even though if our parents were not safe, we can still create that inner safe attachment because we all have a self. We all have what I call the inner parent. But that is possible for our parts to get to know that space, even if they didn't get to know it when we were children. Yeah, and all this being self-led, we're going to get back to that soon with the 3 steps. And we also talked more about it in the first episode.
So this is like, yeah, this is really kind of point five. Like we can improve, we can change our levels of attachment for ourselves and our children to becoming more self-led.
Yeah, so just knowing as well that all reactions we have also to our children, that they always make sense, but that they often make sense from a place in the past, from a place of our own insecure attachment. So what is really survival strategies, what was really smart, what was helping us be loved by our parents is a really good thing. It's something that really helped us and protected us. And we bring that into adulthood, we bring that into parenting, it often gets triggered a lot with our own children. Which is in a way a good thing. It is a really good thing. It's a trail. It's a way to get to know ourselves better. Mm. It's something that's really important. And we don't want to pass at least all of it on to our children. We are going to pass some of it on. But the more we can be aware of it, the more we can take responsibility for it, the less we will pass on of what was not good for us.
Yeah. Yeah, something that made complete sense back then, but is less useful now. Yeah, like maybe having to please or fawn as a child, because that was the safest way to get what I needed from a parent. Of course, when we become a parent ourselves with a partner, actually just seeking to please doesn't actually get us very far. But as you say, it's a real gift because it gives us the entry point of where we need to look. Yeah. Yeah. So all these things become opportunities if we look at them through this lens of attachment, IFS, and being self-led.
Yeah, so what we can do now, IFS is really helpful for that because we have the understanding of the self and the knowing, not just from IFS, that the brain is plastic, that neural pathways can be created and can be changed throughout life. And we can heal the burdens of our past. It's not just learning to live with it or knowing that that's the way it is for me, but we can actually change this by creating inner attachment. What our parents couldn't always do for us, we can actually do that on the inside. And when we can do that, when we can create inner attachment inside of ourselves, we can help our children feel a safety attached to us. So being a self-led parent and parenting in general is not about doing. Mm. It's about being.
Wow. That's a big one. It's about who I am in the moment, not what I do.
Yeah, that's really secondary, right?
What I do flows from who I am in that moment. Start with the being.
Yeah. So the qualities, which is about being, not doing, is emotional availability. And it's also about being there physically with our boundaries, depending on the age of the child. It's about our children having something to lean into.
Mm.
And of course, there's still boundaries and soft as well. Otherwise, there's nothing to lean into, right? It's about being with our children the way they are. And having those, I don't know if it sounds like opposites when I say it, but having clear boundaries. Because having clear boundaries is the child not having to figure out who is my mom, who is my dad right now, or who am I allowed to be. But being clear from the inside is really safe.
Mm. There's something about predictability. Like I can trust them to be the same person when the situation repeats.
Yeah, but a deeper level, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'm going to say yes to an ice cream and sometimes I'm going to say no to an ice cream, right?
Mm.
So it's not about having to have the same reactions every time and having to say yes to too much because then my kids are going to expect the same next time. Mm.
But it's the sort of same person showing up. It's not one time when I ask the question about ice cream, mum's all soft and lovely and willing, and then the next time she explodes at me. Yeah.
Yeah, so the last thing I wrote is what you actually just said. It's about being safe. It's about not being reactive when there's difficulties. So like I said before, the relationship protects the child also when we're not there. And you don't have to be perfect.
And just to say one thing on this, I think that's really important is, you know, we're talking about being soft, open, available. A lot of guys hearing this are going to go, I suspect, you know, we often react to, but I want my child to be strong, especially if it's a son, perhaps, because I've got ideas of what a man should be. I want my son to be strong and tough and resilient. The sort of challenge here is to recognize that actually we want our child to be, what I mean, to be resilient, able to cope with difficult things, to be able to cope with stress, to be able to do the right thing, not necessarily the easy thing. And the point we're trying to make is actually the way to help them be that person is by making them feel safe, by making them feel accepted, by helping them feel enough in those difficult moments, by allowing them to feel that all the range of their emotions are acceptable. So actually, it's by being soft, safe, available to our child that we allow them to develop that strength and that resilience that we want in later life. And I think that's a key thing for a lot of, particularly dads, but I'm sure not just dads, to get their heads around.
Yeah, that's really important, because that when we feel like we have to, you know, push them out of the nest so they learn to fly, just creating stronger protectors, that's a protective system that might look really tough, that might look like it can do everything. But behind that, they're falling apart.
Yeah.
Right? There's not that secure foundation under that.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really important. And like I said, you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to do any of this perfectly. And when we cannot do it, when, just like I said in the beginning, I learned a bunch of stuff up in my head, but I couldn't do it. And then there's always a good reason for that. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with me. It means there's something important, something that happened to me, something I need to be curious about.
Yeah. So I was thinking of an example here, and I wanted one that was, that spoke to the lot of the sort of challenges I hear a lot from dads. And it's just stuff about what we might call like productivity or not being present, present with our child or partner. Because there's something around productivity, and the kind of examples I'm thinking about tend to involve me and my phone, or me and a laptop, something like this. So for me, there's, you know, for a long time, I think in my relationship, but also as a parent, I had this relationship with work, with my phone, that I didn't really want to acknowledge, you know, talking about not being perfect and blaming, you know, where that my wife would point out to me, and I found ways to ignore or avoid or blame or justify, you know, because I'm very important and doing very important work. Can't you see that? And slowly starting to ask, you know, why? Perhaps when I'm responsible for being with my child, I'd find myself compelled to be on my phone and sending emails or even surfing the internet and stuff like that. And really being preoccupied and frankly not present. It's always, you know, one more email, send one more email, read one more article, and starting to question why that was. So the sorts of things that would happen when it was pointed out to me that I wasn't present with my child, because obviously being present dad was something that was important to me, I can either have a really kind of sympathetic arousal response and get really activated and get angry and bitey with my partner. But that's kind of covering a sense of unease, a sense of shame, a sense of frustration. The other way I might respond was as a sort of, for a much more kind of parasympathetic shutdown response. My wife would call like cloud cuckoo land, like I wasn't really there in these moments. I wasn't actually, you know, she might talk to me and I couldn't really respond in a, from a place of me, you know, of awareness. And what I came to learn was I was really responding just from parts. And these attachments I had around what work meant to me and like doing, especially as, you know, I'd learned that being productive and being efficient and being a good boy, I guess, you know, was the way to get good stuff. So actually sending emails and being more productive in work was really important, even at the expense of being present with my child. And likewise, being with difficult feelings, like, you know, if I had maybe worry or anxiety or things like this in work, were actually really difficult to deal with. So actually, I'd rather just numb that and avoid it by just being on my phone and doing something else or surfing the internet. And what the working on myself to do, I guess, was actually try and strengthen that primary attached relationship between my parts and myself, and actually start to notice the part of me that felt, when I was in these situations with my child and not present, actually there was a part of me that was feeling quite scared. Something nothing to do with her, but to do with a work situation, and was following the path, a kind of numbing path that was effective at one point in my life, perhaps, but wasn't very effective now. Trying to be a parent, where a part of me felt like it was, you know, it was so important to get a good response from work because that had real meaning to me. That meant I was significant in some way. and actually start to build that relationship between those parts and myself. So I could start to be more self-led and choose who I wanted to be in that moment with my daughter. And as I started to do this work, it meant I was more able to notice when those parts were around and actually set an intention of wanting to be present with my child and say, okay, I know that those parts that are anxious or feel the need to be really productive right now and maybe don't like the fact that I'm meant to be spending time with my daughter, I really get them. And actually allow them to feel heard and feel seen and step back so that I could choose who I wanted to be before I step in the room with her. So it was all about, quite a painful thing, actually building that security between those parts of me that are there for perfectly valid reasons and a stronger core sense of self who was able to care for those parts, but also make choices about who I wanted to be with my daughter. And this is still a challenge, an ongoing challenge, but I've come a long way with it. And it's something I hear from a lot of dads about the relationship with their phones and work getting in the way of them being present. With the things you talked about around the qualities of a parent, emotionally available, open, work and phone and things like that getting in the way of it. So I just wanted to speak a little bit to that and the way we can actually change that through exploring these ideas of attachment and self-led parenting. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you for sharing it. How do you feel having shared?
A bit tender. I want to communicate in a way that's understandable. So if it's not, then do say. But it feels an important one because I think a lot of guys spend a lot of time being physically there, but emotionally absent. Yeah, and I think that's sad for everyone.
Yeah, that is really important and very common.
Yeah. What about you? What can you share with us?
Yeah, I think one thing for me, especially as a young mother to my first child, being out with other people, both like with my family, but also just out in social situations. But I remember being out in these places and not having, of course, I didn't really know that right then, but not having that safe foundation inside. My son was, we had a difficult birth and he was a C-section kid and he was crying a lot and very hard to calm, which was both because of the birth that was difficult, but also because it was hard for me to really connect. So when we were out with other people, that was even more difficult. So if he was upset or if he was hungry, like nothing was working, nothing was helping. And really, when I look back on it, what was important then was like, what do the other people think about me? That was dysregulating me even more. So that scanning for people's reaction, trying to figure out who can I be here, what's okay, what's not okay. How can I calm my baby down so I feel better, so I look better, so I'm more acceptable? Which, of course, made it a lot worse, right? Because when I'm in that, I'm not a safe attachment figure. There's not a lot to lean into for my child. So then, of course, he's going to be even more upset and not be able to calm down, not be able to sleep, even though he actually needs it. But really, having done therapy, having worked on myself, I started to create that safe foundation inside of myself, that inner connection. So it's really about the window of tolerance. I don't go out of that window of tolerance. I can actually stay present and stay inside of myself no matter the, like, I don't care what other people think. I always used to think that I didn't care what other people think, but that was up in my head. Like, my nervous system actually cares because that's about survival, really, when it comes down to it. So I'm actually able to stay present and stay connected no matter what the people around me think in social gatherings. It doesn't have to unsettle my nervous system and who I am and who I can be. I don't know if that makes sense.
I feel like so many people can relate to that. My wife could totally resonate with that, and I resonate with it, you know, around the kind of, when I'm not really conscious and present, like these expectations I put on myself, how I should be in public as a dad out with my daughter, how she should be, how I want her to be. And if she's not, you know, what parts come up in me, how reactive I can get with her. Yeah, it makes so much sense. And as we're saying, the point we're trying to make is that there are ways of working on this.
So we're going to do the three steps. We're going to go through the three steps of self-led parenting. And then afterwards, Joel's going to do a meditation using the three steps so you can get a sense of it. So the first step is called drop in. It's about dropping into yourself. So kind of getting triggered. If you're triggered by your children, we're going to assume it's your children here. It could also be your partner or anybody else, really. But the first step when you get triggered by your children or in the relationship is to take the child out of the equation. So that means for a moment, you just only focus on yourself, not on your child. And of course, if the child is in any kind of danger, you're not going to just focus on yourself. But we're assuming that they're not. dropping into yourself means closing your mental doors for a moment and just noticing your skin or noticing kind of the space around you, your boundary to the world, and to see what needs to happen for you to be present inside of yourself, dropping into the here and now in your inside space. So we're not just focusing on the part of you that's activated, but more on your core self. So the activated part is going to be there as well. It can also be more parts. And we're not trying to change anything about that, but we're also going to feel ourselves. We're also going to feel our inside space, not just a part. So one way to do that is just to focus on your breath. Just your breath coming in and out of your body. If it feels right, you can make it a bit slower or a bit deeper, or just notice it. And we're going to try this in a moment. You can also be noticing your feet. Noticing yourself sitting in the chair. If you're standing up, you could sit down or even lie down if it makes sense where you are. And just noticing the surface under you that's really holding you. So you could also be doing a body scan, like we did that a bit in the last meditation as well. Just noticing you could notice your skin and kind of your surface to the world from your head to your feet. Or it could be just noticing the space inside of you. And it can also be noticing the boundary around you. Like energy-wise, we take up a lot more space than just our bodies. So the boundary can be even bigger than that. That just depends what feels right to you. And it can be holding yourself, placing your hands on your heart, on your chest, or anywhere that feels right. So it's just about being in your skin and feeling your inner foundation, your inner attachment, and knowing in a felt way that there's something to lean into here. And this is going to really open up space to be you, to be present, because it's going to be more grounding inwards. And it's really hard when you're triggered. Actually, I tried this a few days ago when I was putting my daughter to sleep, and I had to like step away from there. And then I tried to do this, just noticing my inside space. And in the beginning, I was just like, okay, this exercise doesn't work. It's not possible, because I just felt the triggered energy. But then just allowing that to be there and actually noticing also my breath, not making it go away. That's the mistake we often make, is we try to push it away. But just letting it be there and also focusing inwards, also noticing myself. Then the change does happen. And the step two is welcome, which means all parts are welcome. So this part is after dropping in, and you're going to do this a little bit or a lot, depending on how much you tried it out and how it fits for you. But just dropping in a bit, you're going to invite the triggered part or any parts that are reacting to the triggered part into that space that you've created. So as you feel yourself there, you invite the part, the triggered part, to also feel you there as well. So to notice that there's somebody here, there's something here that it can lean into. So instead of looking outwards, like our parts usually do, you're invited to look inwards as well, to notice you there. And then you just notice, what do I notice about this part? How is it present for me? Is it a thought, a feeling, a sensation? That's what we talked about in the first episode as well. Like, where do I notice it? Anything you notice about it? Because that separates it a little bit from you and gives you more space, and the part is able to see you there, to be there with you. And just let it know, I'm here, I notice you. Invite it to notice you and to lean in a little bit if it's willing to. And just check with the part, what does it need from you right now? What does it need to be able to give you some space so you're actually able to be in the present with your child? So sometimes just the leaning in is enough. And it can also be promising you're going to check in with it tonight or next time you're in therapy. But just having it lean in a bit and inviting it to give a little bit of space. So there's space for you here as well. Step three is called choose. So it's choosing through being self-led. We can choose how we want to respond, who we want to be in that moment. So now that we've been with our parts, it's time to focus outwards again. So this is about opening your mental doors and noticing yourself here with your child, with the outside world. And it's really important with this, when we talk about mental doors, that this is in a way a boundary, right? It's me and the world. And you don't have to open it completely. You can open it a little bit. This door is supposed to be flexible. And most of us, especially if we have trauma, it's either completely closed or completely open, which is not very helpful. So just noticing that as well, I can just open it a little bit. If my parts did not want to relax as much, if I don't feel completely safe, especially if it's not your kid, but somebody else, you might want to just open it a little bit. But this is about, what does my child need right now? So it could be to be listened to be witnessed, to be translated, to be hugged, to hear my boundary. So if you have a small child, it could be something like, I saw you throw sand at the other kid when he kept taking your shovel. And I didn't feel very good, did it, when he kept doing that. So you got angry and threw sand at him. Is that right? You're translating kind of what you're seeing and checking if that's right. So he's feeling seen. or you really wanted another ice cream. It looks really good, huh? And he's like, yes, could I have one? No, I don't want to give any more sweets today. So it's really not about changing anything, but kind of naming it. And just hugging your child if they hurt themselves or upset for any reason without having to have an opinion about that, but being with whatever emotions come up. So that's the first part of it. What does my child need? And the other part is, who am I able to be right now with my child? So you might have a triggered part that got angry for some reason. So sometimes it's appropriate to speak for that anger, because we're not trying to not be angry, for instance. It's about speaking for the anger instead of through the anger. And that's the kind of difference between being parts-led and being self-led. So it could be, I'm noticing some anger right now because I told you to clean up your room and you didn't do it. What was it like for you, for instance? Or a part of me got angry and it's letting me know that I don't want to be treated like this. What do you notice? So it's about, here I am, this is about me. And what's it like for you? So you're just really noticing too, do I have space? Am I able to be emotionally available? Do I have a yes or a no? Like, what's my boundary? Who am I able to be right now with my child? Yeah, so before I kind of stepped away, I was annoyed and I was telling my daughter how it was for me, which was not helpful for her. So when I came back, I just came back and I took her up on my lap because I could see she was upset. So we were just talking for a while. And then I ended up taking her into my own bed instead of having her sleep in her bed, which is normally my boundary that she should sleep in her own bed. But at that point, that was not what felt right. And I could be okay with that, which sometimes I wouldn't say yes to.
Yeah, so let's try it. So obviously in a real life moment, you won't have this much time, you know, to go through it in this way, in a meditative way. But we want to give you guys a chance to experience it and feel it a bit for yourself. And you can hopefully tap into this experience in those moments. So before we start, just take a few minutes to think of a situation where you felt a little triggered or a little stuck, perhaps with your partner or with your child. Try not to choose something that's really difficult, especially if you're new to IFS and therapy. And definitely don't do this if you're driving. So this meditation is an invitation. Don't push yourself to do it. You know your system, we don't. So really take any parts that are unsure about it seriously. Maybe you want to listen through this first or do the meditation together with someone you trust before you do it on your own. You don't have to close your eyes or breathe deeply or anything else we suggest. And if you do close your eyes, you can always open them again and come back to the room in the here and now. And remember, slow is fast. That's Anna's favorite phrase. Pushing yourself will have the opposite effect than intended. Slow is fast. So if you need, pause this here for a moment to think of a semi-difficult situation. One where you're triggered, but it's not off the scale. It could be your children fighting, trying to get them out of the door in the morning, difficult meal times, challenging conversation with your partner, or even your own parents. So just take a moment right now to connect with that. So bring the situation to the front of your mind and let it play out until you notice a little of that triggered sensation inside of you. It might be that you get angry, annoyed, sad, that you feel tightness somewhere in your body, or you notice some strong thoughts about your child or your partner, or about yourself. You might notice an impulse to do something, to move in a certain way perhaps, and just notice how you're aware of that. Is it a thought or a sensation in your body? And really imagine yourself in this situation. See it in your mind's eye and take in what it's like. And now send your awareness inwards and drop in. Focus your awareness on the inside of your body and your mind, to the space that is inside of you. The space that is you. Send the image of your child or whoever is in the scene with you out of your awareness for a moment and imagine yourself closing the door between you and the world around you. Perhaps notice your skin and how it's a boundary to the world around you. Now start focusing on your breath, if that feels okay and helpful. Just notice it gently filling your body, your lungs, your chest, and leaving again and again, like the waves of the ocean, moving in and out. And send your awareness with your breath into all corners of your body, your stomach, your back, your legs, your feet, arms, hands, and head. Feel the chair or the floor holding you. Feel the surface of the chair or floor touching the surface of your skin and the texture of the clothes between. If your breath is short and fast, see if it feels okay to soften it a little and let it go a bit slower or deeper. But respect what you notice. Don't push for anything. Notice if there is any spaciousness, openness, or warmth in your heart, coming from your heart. See if it wants to move or expand. What does that feel like? Wait here a moment. And when you're ready, invite the parts or sensations or feelings that were present in your example back into the space that you've created within you. And welcome any parts that show up. Just take your time to see how you notice that part now, that feeling or sensation. It might be less intense than before, but just welcome it exactly as it is. Maybe it was the anger, sadness, thoughts about yourself or your child, tightness, physical impulses. Whatever it is, just welcome it and notice anything you notice about it. Take your time. And invite the part to notice you there as well. Invite it to feel into your spaciousness. Feel your breath move with it. Your open heart, the soft walls of your skin. Just invite it to notice as little or as much of you as it is willing to see. We don't want to make the parts do anything, because even that intention is blocking them from feeling you from the inside. So just give space and hold space. These parts are welcome as they are. So invite them to be in this space and be with you, even to see or to sense you, instead of facing out into the world and your triggering relationships. Let the part know, I am here. I notice you. You are seen. You are not alone. I know you, and you make sense. see if there is anything that this part needs you to know about the present or the past. Listen if it feels right. And if anything feels like it might be too much right now, then let the part know that you will get back to it. Maybe tonight or tomorrow, or when you're with your therapist or practitioner. And let it move if it wants to. Let it lean into you and feel that connection with you if you feel open and spacious still. See if there is anything this part needs to be able to give enough space for you to be with your child or your partner when you go back into that outer relationship. Does it want you to know something specific? Perhaps about your boundaries? Or does it want to stay in a specific place in your body or behind you when you go back into that example? How big or small does it want to be? Anything that feels fine with you is fine. Remember that your parts, these emotions, thoughts, sensations, they're like your inner children. They just need loving connection from you. And when it feels right, ask your part to give space as much as they feel safe with and are willing to at this point. And get ready to focus outwards again in your example from a space of choice where you can choose how you want to show up in that situation. Take your time and notice the boundary of your skin. Slowly open your mental door. Notice that you don't have to open it all the way. Just notice how open or closed it should be at this point and in this relationship. Bring your child or partner or parent back into your awareness. And from within your own spaciousness, notice, what does this person need right now? Perhaps to be listened to be witnessed, translated, hugged, even to hear a clear boundary from me. And notice, who am I able to be with my child, with this person, right now? What resources do I have within me that I'm able to share? Maybe there's something that the part of you that got triggered needs you to speak for or to do in the relationship in that moment. Just feel from within who you are able to be right now and what kind of boundary you need to set for yourself to be safe for your child or your partner. Really feel from the inside who you can be in relation to your child at this point, and how you can be there in a way that responds to their needs. Take your time here, be slow. And even if your parts weren't willing to give you much space, know that there's a good reason for this, and that an exercise like this of noticing inwards does create a bit of space to be with your parts, which is a big step, even if it feels smaller than you wanted it to be. There is always a good reason for the way things are at this very moment. And all we have to do to take the next step on our journey is to slow down and be curious. So when you feel complete for now, thank your parts for the work they just did with you and the trust that's already there, however little or much that is. And slowly start sending your awareness back to the present. Stretch, open your eyes if they were closed, and move your body a little. Take your time and just see if you need anything to be gentle with yourself as you come back into the room.
It was very nice.
How was that for you?
Mostly relaxing and helpful. Wondering if you could hear the noise in my background from my kids.
Not at all, actually.
Oh, good. But it was interesting because I choose something with my kids where if I make, especially if it's some big decisions and they don't agree with it, it's a decision about them and they don't agree with it, then I notice like a part in my head that's just like spinning around, like all stressed. And that gives us some, this is kind of not knowing what to do. So I'm not very adult at that point, right? So I was trying to focus on that.
Yeah.
But then doing the meditation, I kept feeling like, because you could see me here, right?
Yeah.
So I kept like noticing that instead. Felt like it got in the way that I noticed kind of some parts. I felt like more tensed up because I was being watched. I don't know if you're looking at me or not, but noticing that. So I noticed that something tensed up. And then it was also some, because that's like one of my core issues is being seen and not being seen, right? And I was trying to get that to go away so I could do the work. But then I realized, of course, I should just be with these parts instead. And this happens in therapy all the time. Like for our clients, right? They want to work on something and then something keeps getting in the way or they black out and they can't think of anything. Can't feel anything, and then that's the part we want to be with, right?
Yeah, because presumably that's what happens in the real life.
Well. Yeah,
something comes in. Yeah.
Yeah. So just knowing that it's not in the way, it is the way, right? Then that's the part we're gonna be with. So as soon as I realized that, I just started being with these parts, and then they just like relaxed so much more.
Mm.
So before they were all tensed up and facing you, even though I weren't looking at you, then they just started kind of being softer and facing more inwards.
Mm.
So they just relaxed a lot more.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's what we were talking about earlier in the episode, right? About inner attachment, the connection, like our parts leaning into us so that there's that sense of security and spaciousness and choice that comes from that.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I don't really have an example of how am I going to be with my kids in this situation now, because I could feel if I went back to that was like very forced.
Mm.
So I was just kind of staying here.
Yeah. Well, way to go in listening to your system.
Yeah. It took me a while.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I want to go over there.
Yeah.
That's what my brain wants to focus on. And it's hard to stay with what's coming up. And how did it feel trying the three steps? Did you notice them? The drop in, the welcome, and the choose?
Just the dropping in felt really nice and being with the part. And then step three, I didn't do that as much because I wasn't using the other situation, but it felt really helpful. It felt really good, I think. Yeah. How was it for you?
So I don't know the word. It's a pleasure. I was feeling more and more as we went through that, more of a physical experience than just a verbal experience. We're curious in what that was like for people listening.
Yeah.
And if it feels safe and appropriate, we'd love to hear feedback.
Yeah, also just like, what do they notice? Both for, they can tell us, and also for noticing themselves right now. Was anything really easy? Maybe surprisingly easy. Was anything really difficult?
Yeah.
Something made sense or something didn't make sense?
Yeah.
Maybe something feels different. I really noticed something they didn't notice before.
Yeah, and see if there's some space just to notice when this scenario comes up again. See if you notice any more space.
Yeah, and people can contact me on Instagram and you on Twitter.
They can also send us a voice message. We'd love that. Anything else we need to say, Anna?
Well, next time we're going to talk about New Danish parenting.
Whoa. Yeah.
That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I want to know more about New Danish parenting.
Yeah. I'm curious to see what you're going to think about it.
Yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really helpful. And it really, attachment is part of that. And and it fits with the IFS perspective as well, at least the way I see it.
Yeah, I have no doubt. Until then, happy parenting.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.